Right now, if it's a Monday morning and it's around 7:33 or 7:32, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us, and we talk food during this segment. Good morning, Arthur. How are you?
I am just fine. And you?
Good. I have a question to ask you. Every year around this time, I do get corned beef and I make it. I don't make it for corned beef and cabbage. It's a good excuse, but it's the one time a year I get corned beef and then I make it, and I make sandwiches for about 2 weeks, and I make corned beef.
You make sandwiches with it?
Yeah, and I make corned beef hash, corned beef hash.
But, well, I'm like you. I like the hash better than the corned beef.
So what happened this time, I got a piece of corned beef, and I always get a small, it's not a big one, 2.5-3 pounds, and I made it like I always do, and it came out, it tasted like it was 100% salt, and I didn't do anything to it, like, so then they gave me another one, okay, because, and I made it the other one, perfect, came out perfect, but this the first one came out like, it just tasted like salt. I've never encountered that with corned beef.
Blame the meat.
Yeah.
When in doubt, I don't think it was you. I don't know what you do.
I just
let it simmer very, 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 very slowly.
275
takes
for three,
a long time. Yeah. You can put it in the oven. 275. Is that what you did?
Yeah, 275 covered, and I put underneath it carrots and potatoes just to lift it up off the bottom of the pot, and 275 for about three and a half hours.
Whoa! Wait a minute. You didn't boil it.
No.
Oh, you should have boiled it.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I put water.
The mistake of
I do.
You know what? I don't want to go into my various.
No, but I'll take that back.
Corned
I do,
beef mistakes.
I put about 2 inches of water in the bottom of the pan. I do.
So you're steaming it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see, well, that should have been fine.
Yeah,
I must say that's, I think, a nice method.
Yeah.
But I have no idea it was all salt. But it also shrinks. Somebody commented on this the other day that they bought a 5-pound corned beef and it turned out to be a pound and a half, 2 pounds.
Oh, mine shrinks.
It shrinks enormously.
Yeah.
But I put my corned beef into cold water with some pickling spices and a bay leaf, and bring it to a gentle simmer, and it usually takes at least 3 hours for it to get tender, and not always so succulent, because the brisket these days, and also I buy the top part. I don't buy the first cut, which is what everybody wants, because it's called first. I think that's why everybody wants that flat piece on the bottom, because it's called first cut. But that doesn't mean that it's the best cut, I don't think. I think the other cut, which in fact you could probably hardly ever find except around St. Patrick's Day, it's called various things. I call it the deckel, but because that's a Yiddish word, German word actually, for that top muscle that... triangular muscle that is separated from the so-called first cut by a layer of fat. And what the butchers these days do, they sell you the bottom trimmed of all the fat, and it hardly ever gets succulent enough for me these days. So, I mean, the other day I had barbecued brisket that was sensational, and I can find that around. Anyway, corned beef, tough one. But I do like to make some corned beef when I can, because now I can find that top muscle, the thick cut, the triangle cut. I'm trying to think what other things they call it, but it's around now. And cook it that way. We'll eat a little bit of it with some vegetables. But really, what I want is to dice it up the next day and cook it with potatoes and onions and make a hash.
Yep. All right. Now, I took Arthur away from the subject, which he was going to, which
well,
is totally
I mean,
different.
I'm obsessed with my subject of this week.
Yes.
Because it's Ukraine, but by way of Tuscany. So, I know I'm going to take you all over the place, except... We're going to start at the house in Certaldo, a village outside Siena, where my friend Judy Witz Francini, who is in fact American, one of the, I don't know if there are many, but at least I know a number of expatriate Americans in the food world, and Judy is prime among them. Judy has a website and newsletter called Divina, D-I-V-I-N-A, Divina Cucina, C-U-C-I-N-A, which to me means divine cook. But it could also mean divine kitchen, I guess. Anyway, La Divina, Judy, is part Ukrainian. Now, it's interesting because she has a very mixed background. She's from California, originally. And she always likes to say that she's part gypsy. And apparently, that's she can verify that. And she just wrote a long newsletter about not her, so much her Ukrainian background, but as we are all Ukrainian. I mean, really, the world is all feeling Ukrainian. But also, she wrote, because she has had an extremely stressful year, and through her, all her travails, she's always upbeat. She's always hopeful. It's a great, her newsletter is a great read. She now does video, and she'll take you to a market in Tuscany or wherever. She does tours, by the way. She does Zoom classes. I'm always amazed. Judy is not a kid, and she does seem to have the technical communication skills of a young, very young person, because she's really all over the internet. So anyway, she wrote about her Ukrainian background, and also how when she is stressed, she cooks. And that totally resonates with Arthur. When I'm stressed, I cook. But actually, when I'm stressed, some days I don't want to cook. I want somebody to cook for me. But that's another story. But I do. It is my go-to meditative state. And one of the things that brings me most into meditation is having to cut vegetables all the same size and various vegetables. So, inspired by Judy, La Divina Cucina, I made Ukrainian borscht. I used the recipe that's in my book, Soup Suppers, but in fact, I didn't use that exactly. I used to make this all the time. It was one of my favorite things to make for friends when I lived in an apartment in Midtown Manhattan, where I only had two electric stovetop burners, and so soup was the way I went to entertain my friends. A big bowl of main course soup. That's what Soup Suppers is. It's all main course soups. And this is definitely a main course, Ukrainian borscht. But I don't want to go into borscht right at by the way, right now, I think it's against my instructions in the book, in Soup Suppers, but I did freeze it because we could not eat all the borscht that I made, and it's now in the microwave defrosting because I have somebody coming for lunch today and we're going to eat the rest of it. I think it'll be good, but also the person who's going to eat it, an Italian, may not know the difference. Oh, by the way, there are a lot of Ukrainians in southern Italy. There's a word for a caretaker, badante in Italian, and many badante, mostly women, but a couple men I've met too, are Ukrainian. And a lot of the agricultural workers in southern Italy are Ukrainian. So there's tumult there as well. But back to Tuscany. So Judy, I must say, being always upbeat, had a column this week about how her garden is starting to come up, and she's thinking herbs. She's a wise woman. She said, we don't use many ingredients in my Tuscan kitchen. And we don't use many herbs in my Tuscan kitchen. And she would, by the way, she has her own cookbook. The Tuscan recipes basically learned from her Tuscan mother-in-law, Andrea's mother. And Andrea is a fine eater. He's not much of a cook, I don't think. I never hear. When she was ill recently, he did cook for her. And, of course, he makes his mother's food, which is heavy on beans, of course. They're Tuscan. Anyway, you have to look her up, everybody. The other Tuscan that I'm very fond of, who is, in fact, also American. I'm not sure where she's from. Her name is Pamela Sheldon Johns. And Pamela, I always want to call her Pamela, because in Italian she's Pamela. It would be two M's to make it Pamela. Pamela and her husband, Johnny Johns, I never found out if Johnny is, I think he is John Johns, but maybe he's not. Maybe they just call him Johnny because he's named Johns. But I've been to their farm in Tuscany, and they call it Poggio, P-O-G-G-I-O, is a word for hill. I think not in Italian, but in Tuscan, I guess you'd have to say dialect. They'll tell you it's the real Italian language. That's how Tuscans are. But Poggio Etrusco, referring to the Etruscans, of course, Etrusco. Well, I recently learned, now, Poggio Etrusco, and by the way, it's in Montepulciano, where there's good wine, too, Montepulciano, Montepulciano. Anyway, Pamela has, you can stay on Pamela's farm, which is wonderful. And, in fact, I'm tempted myself to stay there soon. I just discovered that her oil is now available through a company, a mail order company, called Olio to Go, O-L-I-O, the number two, G-O, oliotogo.com, I guess. So I discovered Olio to Go because somebody sent me a gift of excellent Sicilian olive oil. But as I buy excellent Sicilian olive oil myself in a store, I decided to treat myself to something different. And I rarely buy Tuscan olive oil. Tuscan olive oil has a particular bitterness that I happen to love, but not everybody does. And it's also extremely expensive. So it's my birthday coming up. So I decided to give myself a birthday gift of Pamela Sheldon John's olive oil. It was very expensive, but it's called Poggio Etrusco, and you can find it on Olio to Go. And if you are going to Tuscany, I recommend Judy Witz Francini. You can take one-on-one lessons with her, and as well as Pamela Sheldon Johns. You can take one-on-one lessons with her. So everybody, of course, is being sympathetic to Etruscans, and I think it's always interesting to share cultural stuff about food. And by the way, I just learned this. Chicken Kiev is not Ukrainian. Chicken Kiev was created by a Ukrainian chef cooking in Russia. So just to say, it's not Ukraine. And if you don't remember Chicken Kiev, which was extremely popular when we were growing up, Marshall, I think even into the 70s or even 80s, maybe, it was popular. It's chicken, usually breast of a chicken, boned, and rolled around flavored butter, a compound butter usually, with butter and herb. With you could have garlic, you could have herbs, you could have both, and then breaded and deep fried. I remember there was a version of this that came around for a while where you took boursin cheese, that garlic herb cream cheese, and you used that instead of butter. And by the way, if you want to attempt this, and it is a delicious dish when done well, because and you cut into the chicken, all this butter runs out onto your flavored butter runs out onto your plate. The only little trick that I remember from this is that it's good to have the butter frozen. So after you've made your compound butter, you should freeze it in a roll, and then you can put frozen butter in the middle, and the chicken gets done, and the butter just stays runny. So back to Ukrainian borscht, however, it's a very specific thing. My grandmother made borscht. This is not how she made borscht. My grandmother's borscht, my grandmother's family being from Belarus, not from Ukraine, my grandmother's borscht was, she called it cabbage borscht. In fact, it had no beets in it. We did have a borscht that we ate in the summer that was just sort of beet juice, really just cold beet soup, which you ate with maybe with some vegetables, and my father just liked to drink it, especially with sour cream. And in fact, I remember in the old days, I don't think this is the case anymore, you used to be able to go to Yonah Schimmel on Housen Street, which is still there, making very good knishes. If I say, take my word for it, they're better now than they were in the old days. But in the old days, we didn't go there for knishes. In the old days, we went there for borscht with sour cream already mixed into it in glasses that were in a refrigerated case behind the counter. So the person who served you didn't even have to serve up the borscht. They just had to take out a cold glass of borscht. Anyway, but Ukrainian borscht, the way it is in my cookbook, Soup Suppers, I don't remember where I learned how to make this, but as I did know many Ukrainians, and I did in my first job at Newsday as a food reporter, this is in the 1970s, there was still a lot of first-generation grandmas around, and not first-generation, immigrant grandmas around, and I made a point of going around to different immigrant grandmas and moms even, and learning recipes from them. So here's one that I didn't learn, that I learned from Judy Witz. In Judy's Ukrainian family, they made, American family, they made piroshki using Pillsbury flaky dinner rolls, rolled out and then filled with meat or potato. Those are the Ukrainian-style piroshki. I read online the real recipe. I was curious about all this. And I did read comments about the recipe. The real recipe is, oh, this brings me back to my grandmother, except that she used Pillsbury dinner rolls. So I have to look up the year for Pillsbury dinner rolls to see what year this all happened. More or less. But back to Ukrainian borscht, before it gets too late for me to give you the recipe, is really a big, big root vegetable soup. Because in these cold climates, that's what's plentiful, root vegetables. Mine, which I want you to eat as a main course, is based on a really good beef broth. And for that, I used a couple of pounds of very meaty short ribs, but, you know, my grandmother would have used flanken, but that's short ribs cut the crosswise. It's easier to find good short ribs than it is good flanken, so I used 2 pounds of short ribs. It was a little over 2 pounds. I put that as per my recipe in the book in a 5-quart, it's almost 6-quart pot, and I put the meat in there with 3 quarts of water and 2 teaspoons of salt, and bring it to a simmer. As it simmers, you'll get a lot of what we call in Yiddish schmutz coming to the top, scum coming to the top, foam coming, ugly foam coming to the top. You have to skim that off and keep skimming as it simmers until it's not coming up anymore, or more or less not coming up anymore. Jiggle around those short ribs at some point, because then more of it will come up. Once it's simmering, you can add your vegetables. I just added one big carrot, which I peeled and cut into chunks. And then instead of celery, this is often Eastern European, instead of celery, I used celery root. I had a nice medium-sized one as my recipe. I used about 1/4 of that peeled in the pot with the broth, and I saved the rest to put in the pot later as a vegetable. And then a medium onion, per my recipe, not peeled, stuck with several cloves. I deemed several to be 3 to 5, so I used 5. 8 whole allspice berries. I did use 8 whole spice berries. And that's it. Bring that to a simmer, and it took 2.5 hours for my broth, for my meat, rather, to become tender enough for the bone to get come off and to stick a meat fork into it very easily. And I took out the meat, and that was my broth, which I strained. Now, got to say, I was a little concerned about the broth because it really had a strong flavor of those cloves and allspice berries. But it's my recipe. I had to follow it. But then I stopped because I don't cook this way anymore. This book was written, 25 years ago, 30 years ago? I never really did cook this way. If my recipe says 1 medium parsnip, as this one does, peeled and cut into 1/2-inch cubes, about 3/4 cup, the fact that I ended up with a little over 1 cup didn't disturb me, and I just threw it in the pot. And it happened with all my vegetables. I actually had a little bit more than what the recipe called for, but I'm not going to, because I'm getting 1 cup instead of 3/4 cup, throw away 1/4 cup or throw away a little piece of a carrot. So the vegetables included 2 onions that amounted to 3 cups chopped. By the way, you don't have to make any of this small chop. I would say 1/2-inch dice is more like it. 2 large onions, 1/2-inch dice, everything 1/2-inch. 1 medium parsnip, 1/2-inch. 2 medium... Now, I did not use turnips. I was just about to tell you turnips, but I don't really care for turnips that much, confession. I used cabbage instead. I used 4 cups of shredded green cabbage. I shredded finely, or as finely as my knife was going that day. Not that finely. 1 large carrot, amounting to at least 1 cup, 1/2-inch dice. And that's it for the moment. You put all that into your strained broth, and you simmer 10 minutes. Got to say, I questioned myself, because I haven't made this in a long time, I questioned myself with the timing, but the timing ended up to be perfect. Bring it to a simmer, let the vegetable simmer for 10 minutes, and then you add the other 2 vegetables, which is 2 medium potatoes, more or less 2 cups of potatoes, also in 1/2-inch cubes. Now you're going to like this. This is the beet part. While I was making my broth, I roasted 1.5 pounds. It was a bunch of 3 medium-large beets. And in fact, my recipe calls for 3 medium-large beets, about 1.5 pounds. It was the only vegetable I had that was exactly as the recipe was written. But I used that, and I roasted them. I washed them, and I put them in tin foil in the oven at 400 degrees. These took about an hour, maybe a little bit more, even starting at the cold oven. To know that they're done, I take a metal skewer and poke a hole right through the aluminum foil, because a lot of red liquid will come in. You have to have these on a baking sheet, by the way. You poke a hole, and if it goes in through easily, they're done. And then just take them out, let them cool. I actually made this all the day before. I made the broth the day before. I ate it, put it all together. I made the beef in the oven while the broth was simmering. And the next day I was ready to go, peel the beets, and grate them on the largest hole of a box grater. And after your other vegetables have cooked for 10 minutes, add the beets, add the potatoes, add some freshly ground black pepper, take a little bit of the liquid from the pot, and dilute one very well-rounded tablespoon of tomato paste. I use my very strong Sicilian tomato paste. You may want to use 2 tablespoons of tomato paste if you're using the kind that comes in a can. And dissolve it, and then put it back in the pot, and simmer all that for at least another, you know what, not at least, for another 10 minutes. And then, at the very end, I want you to taste the soup. It may need some salt. It may need a little more pepper. You're going to add some salt and pepper to taste, and also the juice of a lemon. I use the whole lemon. My recipe calls for a half a lemon. I want it a little tartar than that, but not really sour. So I use the juice of a lemon, and I served the soup, but I didn't put it in, with chopped dill on top. And if you want, you can have sour cream or yogurt on top of that, too, but we didn't do that. Anyway, it's a really, really good soup, very thick. If you want it soupier, you can add water, because you're going to see it's very strongly flavored. And what was one of the amazing things is that even though I was really concerned about the spice flavors in my broth, they really weren't, you couldn't pick them out. You could not detect them in the finished soup. It is a great amalgam of vegetable flavors. Oh, by the way, how did I leave this out? I cut up the meat. Some of the meat shredded nicely. If that's what it did, I did that. But some of it I was able to actually cut into pieces. Whatever, I put the meat back in the soup for the last literally 5 minutes of cooking is all, because you just need to heat it through. But this is very good made ahead in the morning for eating later in the day. I hope mine comes out of the freezer okay, because I say do not freeze, but we'll see. The very end, literally as the soup is simmering for its last minute or two, add a huge amount of garlic. You can finely chop the garlic. You can pound the garlic in a mortar and pestle, but I want 8 to 10 cloves of garlic in that pot of soup. Wow. If you like a garlic press, here's a way to use it. This is a good place for the garlic press. You want a little garlicky edge to the soup. And if you cook the garlic more than a minute, it's gonna disappear. And in fact, one of my instructions in this recipe is when you reheat it, to add more garlic. So we're going to see. Because I'm going to reheat it today. After it's been in the freezer against my own, I think, best advice. But, you know, we weren't home. We went to Philadelphia for a weekend. So we couldn't eat it all right out of the fridge. I had to stash it. Anyway.
All right.
This week I am going to make Ukrainian pierogi, but since none of my snobby supermarkets carry Pillsbury refrigerated biscuits, I've got to go to a normal supermarket somewhere to get that. My next-door neighbor tells me the most normal is a little distance away, but I'm trying to walk more, so we'll see. I might walk to a distant supermarket just to buy Pillsbury. They're called dinner rolls?
Yes. Yep.
Or the flaky biscuits. I have to go check with Judy at Divina Cucina. By the way, it's interesting. She's been living in Italy for 40 years. She mainly cooks and eats Italian. She takes tours to Sicily, so she also cooks Sicilian and Tuscan. And she's cosmopolitan Italian. But sometimes she has cravings for tacos or something Indian, you know, because she's American and she's used to more variety, even though she went to Italy in her youth.
All right.
Everybody have a good week. Unstress yourself and make a pot of soup.
All right, Arthur. We'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, right here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find Arthur, of course, on our website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.